better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
I think once the starting quarterback's named, then I think it'll kick back into excitement once again. But right now, we're just kind of floating along with things and trying to make sure that any type of news, any type of new story that comes out from Razorback football, we break it down and discuss it here on the Morning Rush. But it's good to have you in. Of course, if you want to get in on the conversation this morning, be sure to call or text into the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. And Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette will be joining us around 7:35. We'll give some updates from him dealing with the Arkansas Razorback fall camp and some of the news that are coming out. Because I know that Chad Morris came out yesterday, and you can watch this interview on hitthatline.com in its entirety. But he gave a little bit of an injury update because on Saturday he didn't mention about the serious injuries that happened to a guy like Deion Stewart. And now he came out and gave a little more description about it, as well as Jordan Jones and some other updates as well. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, so a lot going on. I think everybody's just in camp fatigue.
It's frustrating.
Mode. Players, I think Clay's right about what he said yesterday about, you know, Morris knows the questions that are coming. That still doesn't mean he's not tired of answering them.
So, yeah.
You know, I agree. You know, he knows that he's going to get asked about the quarterback. He knows probably half or more of the questions that are getting ready to get asked, because guess what? They're obvious. So it's pretty obvious that, you know, you need to get to an answer. So I don't know. I just find it interesting. Mainly because we went down this path last year and we know what the record was a year ago. Obviously, we continue to talk about 2-10, 2-10, 2-10, and you didn't name a quarterback. And we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it caused a problem throughout most of the year. We all feel, hey, this wasn't going to be no 8-4 team last year, and they goofed it up with the quarterback deal, but this could have been a 4-8 team last year. This could have been a 5-7 team perhaps last year. I do think they goofed that up. So that's what I think everyone's nervous is. Everybody feels like this could be a 6-6 football team this year, and they don't want them to goof it up because it's an important year to make a rebound. And you're not having to rebound from a very good position. You're rebounding from, I guess it's a good position to rebound from because it's easy. It's an easy bar to clear. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Am I jumbling my words?
No.
You looked at me funny.
Well, no, it's just because I was thinking, as you were saying that, I was trying to think of a time, just in my lifetime at least, in any Razorback sport, especially the ones that I always followed and enjoyed growing up, that where there was ever in a situation like this, even if it was basketball. I know in baseball it hasn't, because baseball's been pretty much great since I've been around. Never had to worry about it. Basketball certainly was great when it first started, but then even under the Stan Heath and then the John Pelfrey era, I don't know if that sport, relatively speaking, was ever at this level of having needing a rebound like this. But football, of course, is the biggest deal. It's the biggest sport on campus. It's the moneymaker. And for having to go through a rebound like this, as you said, it shouldn't be too difficult to at least make the jump. I don't think anyone's saying, hey, go from 2-10 to 10-2 in 1 year overnight. People are just saying, man, if you could get to a bowl game, if you could just get to 500, we'd be tickled pink.
Remember when Houston Nutt survived, what was it,
04 and 05?
Yep. To survive back-to-back losing seasons, and that was such a big deal because under Frank Broyles, no other head coach had survived back-to-back losing seasons. And it was probably a great, you know, I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because 06 may not have happened the way it did. And obviously the recruits and Gus Malzahn and all that in 06 is one thing that helped Houston Nutt preserve his job. But the fact is that that was the standard. You have back-to-back losing years, out of here.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone is going to be surprised, nor does anyone demand Chad Morris lose his job if they have another losing year. Now, is it possible to at least get to 500? Sure. I think it's even possible to go 7-5 this year. Now, they're going to be better than we expect, because
I mean, you look at the AP top 10 that came out yesterday. Yeah. There's, what, two teams on the schedule, on Arkansas' schedule in that? Alabama and LSU. I think Auburn's, what, 12?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you just
start. A&M's there, too.
A&M's, Mississippi State was, what, 20? I mean, you just start looking at the top 25. I think there's five of the top 25 on your schedule.
You know? No, I don't think Mississippi State's in the top 25. They were receiving votes.
Okay, well, they were on the coaches?
They may have been on the coaches. I have to double check on
it. I know they were on. They were 20th in one of the polls.
Yeah.
I heard Ruskin talking about this yesterday, too. It's same conversation we're having.
Right.
About you just start putting together the schedule. And he was talking about I saw he tweeted out he had done all the games across the league yesterday. And we talked about this a month ago, that there's four games on this schedule. Ain't no way in hell you're winning. You know, Bama'd be one of them.
LSU probably
would be one of them. I mean, you just look, and those are the teams that are showing. You know, you'd like to think that you could beat Auburn at home. You'd have a puncher's chance at home against Auburn. And it's down in the year. It's certainly time to. But there's at least four teams on this. No way. Yeah. You know,
I put it as those four teams are the ones where there's no shame in losing. Because
good point.
They know, you know, that they're better than you.
And then there's four games, the four non-com games, you've got to win those. No ifs, ands, or buts.
No question.
It's those other four games, the Kentuckys, the Missouris, those type of games. Ole Miss. And I think there's almost five games, because I think Mississippi State's almost in that category with A&M. You know, A&M and Mississippi State are those fringe teams that are there with Bama, LSU, and Auburn. You know, State and A&M are kind of on the fringe of being in that games you're not going to win. You know, I know you like to think about beating A&M, and you were within a touchdown a year ago. And I'm not saying it's, you know, 0% chance, but like Alabama, 0% chance.
Yeah.
Zero.
But when you really start breaking it down that way, which I agree with you, and I think that those games, you can't even look at it that way. But if you break it down, though, and look at those four games, though, Alabama's the only one that, to me at least, you feel like you don't even have a chance to get close in. I feel like LSU, you could still find a way to compete in it. And still find a way.
I'm not saying they can't compete, John. We're talking about winning.
Right. I know. And that's what I'm saying, is that with those four games, though, and that's why I say there's no shame in losing them,
right,
is because if you perform well against them, I hate moral victories, and I'm not trying to say moral victories should be a standard. But with the team that's coming off of a 2-10 season, because you remember, Tommy, after Brett Bielema's first year when they went 3-9, the next year they went 6-6. Now, which at the time was great. Jay, you went 6-6. You shut out SEC opponents. But you were also competitive in games, too.
I went through that list to say this. Can they even get to, I mean, when you look at the games in that light, can you get to 6-6? Can you get to 7-5 this year?
Yes.
Because the math gets difficult.
You can. Because if you really look at it, last year and this year especially, these two seasons, probably at least since in the BCS era, since 1998, is the easiest schedule that Arkansas has had since 1998, last year and this year. So why can't they do that? And with knowing that this is as easy as it's going to get right here.
Because this would be, what, three straight losing seasons?
Yes. Three straight.
Because Burt went 4-8, 2-10.
And then whatever this season would end up being.
That's why it's important, because you look back, okay, you go back to when they joined the league, you know, not quite 30 years ago. You know, Jack Crow had a rough time, but they you know, he didn't survive into the first game of his second season. Yes, it was. And then they went through the year with Kimes. They were as the interim. And then they brought Danny Ford in. But they always had a bounce back year within there quick enough to keep fans plugged in. There wasn't three or four losing seasons in a row for people to become disengaged. There's been so many losing seasons since 2012 that, because what would it be? I didn't go back and say be accurate, but probably five of the seven.
Since 2012?
Yeah. That you would, you know, 12, 13, 40, 50, 50. Yeah, five of the seven, something like that. I'll look that up, but I think I'm probably pretty close on that. Fans are just getting disengaged, and that it's important from a business standpoint. You look at it no other way, this may be, you ask the question, is this the most important season in modern history? Quite possibly, you make the case, just because of the length of time Arkansas has not been successful with the football program. And then everything else you got going on around it. So you got to get people plugged back in. Last year is embarrassing to have 30-something thousand in your football stadium in attendance in a year where you built the new North End Zone expansion. I mean, the Alabama game had what? I think they announced 50-something thousand.
It was like 49,000.
Yeah, 50,000.
I mean, still think there was more, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, but that's how many tickets they scanned.
I don't think the scanners are wrong. I don't know. But
I mean, you think they're
wrong. It's not many.
Exactly. You're still playing Alabama, the number one team in the country. You had 50,000 there? Okay, let's say they're off 10%. You had 55,000 there? Does that make it sound better? You still had 20,000 empty seats? I mean, how many of those were Alabama fans?
Probably a lot of them. At least a good a bit, because it's always hard to tell with the color coordination.
So, no, I think it's a very important year.
Yeah, and see, that's the topic that, of course, I want to dive into, is just looking at it from the season perspective of, is this most important? I don't think it's overreactionary, and I don't think it's overdramatic to discuss it in that light. This season, I know I'm younger than a lot of the listeners out there, and I know that there were a lot of years of Razorback football that I didn't get to really go all in on because of my age. So if any of you disagree with me, that's fine. I don't want to hear it. But it just feels like this year, if it doesn't go right, if it doesn't get better, if it doesn't take that next step, it's more than just wins and losses. It becomes to where people are already on the fringe. Fans are on the fringe. They're looking like they may jump off if they haven't already. Everyone may lose interest even more. And then the season tickets start spiraling out of control. And then the schedule gets more difficult from then on out. And then you start thinking about it. What if Chad Morse goes 0-16 in his first two seasons? You can't keep a coach that goes 0-16 in his first 2 years. What do you do? And if you do decide to make a move, where do you go from there? It seems like everything hinges on this.
You say that, but didn't Bielema, how long did Bielema go into it? I used to have this, tried to expunge this from my memory, but it took Bielema well into his second year to win his first one.
That's right. But he did. And so if Chad Morris went 2-6 in SEC play this year, would you not say, hey, good job?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened with Brett Bielema too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. And that's the step that needs to be taken. But it's just a matter of if they don't take that step, what happens?
It's into November of his first year.
Yeah, and that's
when they beat LSU 5.
Yeah, and that's a scary place that I know Razorback fans don't even want to think about going into.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Is this the most important Razorback football season in recent history? I think me and Tommy are pretty much on the same page saying it is the most important, at least it is in my lifetime for sure, just because everything's been bad for so long and it got to the all-time lowest of lows last year that if you don't have some sort of progress going in the right direction, I mean, it could really spiral out of control. And I guess, again, if you want to look at it from other SEC teams and the perspectives that they've had, when they had these bad years, they always bounce back. Because Ole Miss had a bad year. But the only difference is, and I have to put the caveat on that, is that after those 2-10 years that these SEC teams had, usually involved a coaching change. When Ole Miss had it happen with Houston Nutt, coaching change happened, Hugh Freeze came in. Same with Auburn. When Gene Chizik did that, coaching change, Malzahn came in, it all changed. So just make sure to throw that out there that it involved coaching changes. But it was always a bounce back where you bring in talent, you bring in the guys that are part of that team and part of the coach's philosophy. It at least bounces back in some capacity.
But, you also, I think, have to factor in you had the coaching change, you had a philosophy change, and all of this couldn't have happened at a worse time in regards to recruiting, where it also lined up with the first time you're doing the early signing period.
In
Morse's first year, that didn't help either. So, I think it's just going to take one more year. I don't think this will be the turnaround year. I don't think anyone's expecting it to be the year you break out. But I think this has got to be the year you show, all right, the bottoming out, as bad as it can get, the lowest of lows, all of those things have happened. That was last year. It's behind us. So 4-8 followed by 2-10 now has to become 5-7, 6-6, whatever. And then from there you just keep climbing up to some point where you stabilize out between 7 and 9 wins. Occasionally you jump up at 10 or 11. You'd like to think you could get back to the days of 2010 and 2011 and be a regular competitor in the top three of this division. Things are going to have to change. The in-state talent's going to have to get better. Or Morris is going to have to do an extremely high-level job of recruiting Texas and getting more four-stars out of Texas to come here. And that's possible, too. But with what's on the roster right now, you're not winning 9 or 10 this year. I don't think anyone expects that.
No.
But they keep building this roster with what they've had the last couple of years. And that's where you talk about consistency. Consistency in recruiting. Problem is, you know, you're 23rd in the country, 10th in the league, you know, 6th in the division. You're just going to have to coach them up, and you're going to have some good fortune. If there's a program, do some good fortune, do some good development of players, do some breaks. It's this one right now. Nothing's went right. So they got to create some luck right now.
And the other factor that I brought into it as well is this year, last year especially, and this year, is by far the easiest schedule you have probably had in the past 15, 20 years.
Losing Michigan was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. And not even the Michigan factor, which I agree with you there, but last year you had Vanderbilt as your East rotating opponent. This year you got Kentucky. And I know nobody's just a cakewalk in the SEC, but you're not like playing Florida and Georgia. Nope. And you're playing some teams that
this is the last winnable,
and this is the last hurrah because not only we know that you play next year Notre Dame on the road, and after that you play Texas, and then you have Oklahoma State down the road. Like your non-conference gets more difficult. Don't get me wrong, but look at your SEC schedule going forward.
Tennessee next year.
You have at Tennessee, or excuse me, no, you're looking at. I got to look at this schedule. You have Tennessee at home next year.
Yep.
Then you have at Georgia in 2021. So. You have Texas and Georgia and Alabama and all those teams on your 2021 schedule. You have South Carolina at home in 2022. Not bad. But 2023, you go at Florida. Then you have Kentucky back in 2024 and at Vanderbilt. So you're talking about the stretch from 2021 to 2023. Well, you're having some difficult SEC East teams as well.
But can you just start beating Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri? Can you start winning those games? Let's just start there. Forget Georgia and Alabama. You beat LSU 1 out of 3. Can you beat Auburn 1 out of 3? Can you beat Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Missouri, the Kentuckys, and the Vanderbilts on the regular? That's the difference in now and what Houston Nutt was doing. Houston Nutt was regularly beating the Mississippi schools. He was regularly taking care of the teams that he should have. And I know it was a different day and time because Alabama wasn't Alabama then. But that's what you got to get back to. Yeah, I mean, you'd love to beat Bama. You'd love to beat LSU on the regular. You'd love to beat some of these, you know, elite teams. And maybe every now and then you jump up and you pull the upset that shocks the world. But you want to be a decent program that people at least have respect for, be a fringe top 25 team. I mean, yeah, you'd love to be a top 15 team. Let's get back in the top 25 first, though, before you start talking top 10, top 15. In order to do that, you better start beating Ole Miss, Mississippi State. You're not doing that right now.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that in those years, though, in the future, in 2022 and 2023, beating those schools isn't going to be enough.
I'm just saying that that's where you got to begin.
Well, of course you do. And it begins this year and then next year. But you can't being 6-6 in 2 or 3 years is not going to be acceptable anymore.
My point is, I don't think they can beat Mississippi State this year. And that game's at home. Mississippi State's a better football team. It's a better football program. They're in the top 25. They're a fringe top 25 team right now. You know? That's what's happened in the last 7 years. Mississippi State has passed you as a program, not a team, as a program. We never used to sit here and wonder, who has the better program? Arkansas or Mississippi State? Arkansas or that was never a conversation that we took serious.
But that's more of a Mississippi State thing than more so than it is an Arkansas thing, though.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's some of both. Because you think they've passed Arkansas or Arkansas went backwards?
I think under Dan Mullen, they had a fantastic coach that was far and away better than what they've had in decades, and he brought them up. And I think under Joe Moorhead, they're going to start going back down to what they were in Mississippi State.
We'll see.
And yeah, we will see. And I'm just going off of just what Dan Mullen was able to accomplish there. Now, Arkansas didn't do themselves any favors because they've been awful, too.
Right.
But I don't see Mississippi State becoming, here's where they're at the rest of the way. From here on out, Mississippi State is going to be this 8-win perennial team each season. Because I don't care what anybody says, Mississippi State is one of, if not the most difficult place to win at in the SEC. Even more so than Arkansas. That's never going to change.
I don't disagree with you there.
So I think that they will come back into it. And Ole Miss right now, you know, they're struggling. They may have a coaching change at the end of this season. So, and this is all coming back to what we're talking about. That's why this is so important. This year is so important. Because, listen, if you don't beat Ole Miss week two, you're going to finish last in the SEC West once again.
Not to upset somebody to not.
Yeah. And
then hope for help.
But you could beat Ole Miss this year. You can.
Yeah. Should have beat them last year.
And honestly, I think you can still beat Mississippi State. I'm not saying you will, but you can. Because they lost a ton of players from last year. It was kind of a disappointing year last year. We don't know what Joe Moorhead's going to do. Mm-hmm. But you could win that game. Why
it's
not?
Down in the schedule.
Yeah. We'll have to see what these two teams are going to be about by that point in time. Because Mississippi State could be a dumpster fire and Arkansas could be better than what people expected. It could be something as simple as that. So we won't know until the games get going. But my point is that if you don't start that progression this year and starting to beat the Ole Misses, compete and maybe beat Mississippi State, compete and maybe beat Missouri, if you don't start that this year, what makes you think it's going to start next year?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to change next year? You're going to keep Matt Luke on staff probably if you end up losing to him. Because Ole Miss is going to probably keep that guy. I mean, you got to be able to show that progression that you're getting back to what you used to have under Houston Nutt, where you were beating those schools and it wasn't even really a thing. And if you lost to them, it was some outlier that was crazy.
Well, you certainly weren't getting swept by them.
No. Not year after year. Now, I know you've beaten Ole Miss and you've gotten, but the point is that you were able to compete in those games and it was a game where you circled. It's like, we should win that one. It wasn't that you will for sure, but we should.
Yeah.
That's what it was about. And Missouri should become the same way. Because I know that Missouri's had some success, and everyone keeps pointing to the record, and I get that, and you got to respect them for it. But at the same time, though, they're never going to be an Alabama or an LSU or even an A&M. They're going to be a program that, worst-case scenario, wins 5-6 games. Best-case scenario, wins 9.
But maybe 10. Since they've joined the league, they've been better than Arkansas in this league.
They have. A lot of that.
And they beat Arkansas, what, 3 of 4?
Mm-hmm. A lot of teams have beaten Arkansas 3 of 4, just, 4 of 4. I mean,
it's miserable.
It is. It is. And then what's frustrating for Razorback fans more than anything is you're losing to programs that you know you're better than.
Yep.
And you know you're better than.
That's the point I'm making, is just start beating those teams. And when you do that, then you'll worry about the next level of where you go in this league. That's my only point is, just beat the teams you should beat. Return this program to where it's not in the bottom tier of the league and get back at least into that middle tier by beating the Mississippi schools, the Vanderbilts, the Kentuckys, the Missouris. And you're not going to win every one of those games, but win 75% of the time when you play that group of schools. There's no reason Arkansas shouldn't do that. No reason as a program that can't happen again.
You're a better football program than those three programs. At least you should be.
All 5 of those programs. Now, you don't play Kentucky and Vanderbilt every year, but when they roll around on your schedule, you shouldn't be losing to them.
Yeah. I was just referring to the permanent ones, but yes, yes. You're better than those. Start acting like it.
Right. I mean, we shouldn't be sitting here worried about winning at Kentucky this year.
No. Should be just, hey, it's a win.
Right.
It's a win.
That's my point is we've got to get back to crawling. Right now, we're not crawling as a program. We've got to crawl before we can walk. We've got to walk before we can run.
I mean,
that's just where it's at.
You're still in the stages of digging out of the hole that you're in. The
grave.
And then you can call it the grave. You got to dig yourself out, and then you can start crawling after you get out of that.
Right.
So it's a process. It's just.
But the first step is beating the teams, being better than the programs you're supposed to be better than.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Good morning, Tom. How you doing?
Hi, guys. Ready to talk to football.
Well, we got plenty of it to talk about, really, when it comes to some of the news that's happened since last time we were able to catch up with you. But I guess the biggest news, and I want to start right here with Chad Morris confirming it yesterday and having a little press conference about it, is the injury to Deion Stewart, where he's going to be out for the season with a torn ACL. Redshirt senior, that apparently they're going to try to apply for a sixth year of eligibility, so we'll see how that plays out. But it's, I mean, you can't lose players in any position, really, but it certainly hurts to lose somebody with as much experience as Deion Stewart there at the wide receiver core as well.
Yeah, I mean, they have really good numbers there, and the prospect of some game-breaker types, guys with speed, and just a really good receiver class. But you don't want that to come at the detriment of having some veterans in that room. And when you think about it, Deion Stewart being out, I mean, Coylin Jackson maybe comes back in another week or so. They lost Jordan Jones for a few weeks. I mean, these are guys, you know, older guys in the core. And so right now they're having to, you know, move some guys around, scramble some guys. I mean, I think they wanted to play Treylon Burks at maybe one spot, but it looks like they're going to have to work him at the nine and the five, the two and the five. And so, that's the nine and five. But the position that Deion Stewart had, he and Jordan Jones were the one and the two. And so now maybe you move Trey Knoxon to a starting role, and he missed yesterday because he was ill. And then Mike Woods might go to the two spot. So, it's a little worrisome at this point.
Any concern from you about offensive line? Not, you know, just from the fact that you've had some injuries, some guys held out. You got Colton Jackson with the foot. You got Austin Capps has been out as well. How concerned are you about this line gelling and them kind of figuring out the rotation, who's going to be in what spot, and just more reps together as a unit? Is it at that point there's some concern?
Well, that's one level of concern with the O-line. And then the second part is they have to be better than they were last year. They have to have fewer missed assignments. They have to have fewer bad snaps.
I thought that part was obvious.
Ty Clary is going to help out with the bad snap part, fewer pre-snap penalties. So if they get that, if they get the better snaps, they get the fewer pre-snap penalties, then you got to have more stalemates across the board. You can't just get whipped. And apparently in this camp, there's been some times where Sosa Ageime or T.J. Smith has just whipped their guy and blown up play, you know. There's some plays where you can just hold off your guy for about two counts, then you know you can start the play going, and sometimes that hasn't happened. So yeah, I would say there's concerns. I think overall they're going to be better on the offensive line. They're going to be better at quarterback, which means you should have a more prosperous run game, and I think they're going to be able to throw downfield better. But we're not going to see what the true product looks like until they play Portland State. And then that could be a game like Eastern Illinois where, you know, you kind of get things going. You get the pass game going. But then it gets real the next week. What I'd like to see is the run game. You remember how dysfunctional the run game was in the Eastern Illinois game? It was, like, surprising that they couldn't create creases. Well, you know they're going to be trying to establish that run a lot more against Portland State.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now on the Cherokee Casino Hotline on the Morning Rush. Tom, the question that we've had, and we've had a lot of interaction with some of the listeners here this morning, and just kind of putting it into perspective for this season of, is it the most important season in Razorback football history? Now, that may be a little dramatic, but it certainly seems like with everything coming together at this point in time where fans, you're not buying season tickets, fans aren't really showing out and having the excitement. They got the North End Zone expansion. They just have a lot of things going against them right now in a 2-10 season on top of that. Do you feel like, as far as taking that next step, that this season in 2019 might be one of the most, if not the most important season in Razorback football history?
Well, I see your point. And there's certainly a level of importance to every season that you start in football. But taken in the context that you mentioned it, waning ticket sales, the fact that they just expanded and want to be able to fill that up. You can see the effort that they've put into with the Hog Street, the pregame stuff and the alcohol sales and all, that they need to get more people in the stands. And so having a winning product, having an exciting football team is important to that. So I think they're going to try their best to have a good balanced offense, but be more exciting, more downfield passes. And which leads into who's the starting quarterback. Well, Nick Starkel has a better downfield passing ability. So that's going to be intriguing the last 2 weeks of this preseason. And I'm with you. I hesitate to say, oh, it's the most important season. But I do think in terms of reestablishing yourself in the SEC and having a chance to go to a bowl game, it is a very, and for Chad Morris's longevity, I think it's a very important season.
For the financial health, or where do you think they're at with the financial health of the football program? Season ticket sales, donation levels, considering the fact that you got a North End Zone project that you still have debt on to service and to pay for. What level do you think it's critical right now? Where do you think they're at? Because we know that season tickets seem to be at a modern day low right now.
Yeah, I'm sure the financial health could be stronger, but they are listed as a top 10 in value by Forbes magazine. The worth of their program, I think it was $89 million in the most recent Forbes. So they're better off than a whole lot of Power 5 schools. But as you mentioned, ticket sales being low and all that, yeah, I mean, it's a reason for concern. But Chad Morris and his staff are recruiting at a high level, and there's a bit of excitement about the team. I don't think anybody expects them to finish in the middle tier of the SEC West, which is so difficult. But having a chance to go to a bowl game, getting 6 wins this season is going to be an interesting scenario to watch.
Your colleague, Nate Allen, wrote a column about media access and that the lack of access has created misinformation, maybe lack of excitement with the fan base. Where do you fall on this argument? If yourself and Bob and Nate and others were allowed into some of these scrimmages, perhaps on Saturdays, do you think that would create more excitement? Where do you fall on this argument that seems to be more of a media argument, media conversation right now? Do you think if we had more to talk about, the fans would be more excited?
I don't know if you can equate that exact example, but our mission, we think, is to tell good stories about the team, you know, tell good featurey stories about maybe the trials these guys have been through or things related to themselves or their family, things they've had to overcome. And our access during the summertime with the freshmen has been good for the paper. And I think there's ongoing discussions about things like the availability of assistant coaches. Hey, there's some coaches, Nick Saban does not allow his coordinators to be interviewed during the season. I think they have one opportunity during preseason camp, and then if they go to a major bowl, then there's another. But we have had continued access to the coordinators, which we all appreciate. We like having that point of view. And I think there's ongoing talk about perhaps having the assistant coaches more available because, as we mentioned, Jeff Traylor was really on point. Just a great interview last week. Barry Lunning was great to talk to. Ron Cooper, Steve Caldwell. Just go down the list. Dustin Fry is amazing to talk to. Justin Stepp has always got some, you know, good points to make. So I think the stories are better, the more access. But as far as how much camp or scrimmaging people view, the coaches are just concerned about having sets and formations and their width of their splits, their personnel, and all that kind of stuff, their substitution packages out there for other teams to break down. And if they're out there before the season even starts, that gives them a heads up. So it's a fine line. A team like Arkansas trying to create some enthusiasm, you know, the more stories, the more you get to know the team, the better it is. So I'm in the camp of, I understand what coaches have to do to protect their schemes and all that. But I'm also in the camp of telling great stories about that football team. So what we try to do is be a pipeline to the fans, and there's a massive fan base that wants to read about the Razorbacks. I'm sure you guys feel the same way about wanting to impart the best information you can about what's going on in camp.
Sure. Well, and then Tom, I just
I guess the one thing that everyone wants to know of what's going on in camp is dealing with the quarterback situation. It almost seemed like there in that press conference on Saturday, which I know you were at, it seemed like maybe there's some frustrations going on with the amount of questions that Chad Morris was getting about the quarterback situation. What do you make of that? Do you feel like Chad Morris does know who the starting quarterback is? And if he does, when are we going to hear the official announcement in your mind?
Well, I take him at his word that they're not sure. I mean, he's got the supreme vote on who it's going to be. But they've got a big scrimmage coming up Wednesday. And I think the guys who've been working with the ones have had trouble getting a lot of traction, okay? Sustaining drives, getting it to the end zone, and it's because the defense is playing fast. That's the way it generally is in a camp. So they want to make sure they land on the right guy and they give them all the opportunities they can. And no, I thought there was a few questions in a row, and Bob, my colleague, was asked in a very lighthearted manner, do you know who it's going to be? You're just not saying. And I didn't sense any frustration out of Chad Morris. It's just he was going with the flow, and he understands he's not going to give that away, even if he did have it. And so I just took it as being a normal quarterback battles are the most over-examined, the most under the microscope of any position because it's that important. And I don't think they've settled on a guy. Last week it felt like Nick Starkel was getting more number one reps. But for the second week in a row, John Stephen Jones apparently was moving his unit down the field the best and getting in the end zone the best. So we think that it's a Starkel-Hicks battle. But who knows? We might see three guys in that Portland State game.
So obviously a big scrimmage coming up middle of the week. Classes starting. I would imagine this final big scrimmage tomorrow will probably determine who's going to get a lot of the reps in the 10 days leading up to game one.
No question about that. It's a big one. There's still some positions where you're trying to get your way on the travel roster. I would think backup positions like defensive tackle, where there's a lot of freshmen, defensive end as well. I mean, they're not going to be able to travel every one of the guys. So, and the receiving core is huge. That now with Stewart out and Jones out for the opener and Coyleman being maybe questionable for the opener, that you get it together. Because week two, you've got to have a 70-man roster to go play an SEC game. So, yes, very valuable scrimmage for them. And hopefully the injury bug doesn't crop up as much as it did in the second scrimmage. And they'll make further advancements in who the quarterback's going to be. My opinion is I don't see how they can – play the Portland State game without giving both of the transfers, Starkel and Hicks, and possibly even John Stephen Jones, some work and to know what you've got heading into the Ole Miss game.
Tom, always appreciate you hopping on with us, man. Enjoy fall camp and looking forward to catching up with you on Thursday, all right?
Outstanding. See y'all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
I want to switch gears a little bit here in this segment. I know we've been talking about Arkansas football, and we'll get back to that here in just a bit. But, you know, yesterday the AP poll was officially released, which, you know, I don't know what I hate more about fall camp offseason, if it's the watch list or the absolute overreaction people have to polls in the preseason as if they matter. Other than just
polls mean nothing.
Literally nothing. Just like watch lists mean literally
nothing. There's only one poll that matters and it doesn't come out for a while.
Yeah. It's called the college football playoff ranking. And that's all the ones that you care about. But either way, the AP poll came out yesterday and there were a few of the SEC teams, of course, represented. You had Alabama, not number one, which I don't think is surprising.
Nope.
At least it's not to me. Clemson is the favorite here. So, I didn't see any problems with that.
And a lot of that's Trevor Lawrence, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. But you know, Alabama has a guy named Tua who's really, really good as well. So I think we all can probably agree that those are going to be the two teams that are going to end up in the championship game this year. At least it will be a surprise if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a surprise for me at least. But you had that ranking. Then Georgia came in at number three. So nothing surprising there as well. LSU is at six. Florida was at eight. Texas A&M at 12, and then Auburn at 16. So that rounds out your SEC teams. And Missouri was the first one receiving votes. So I guess you could say they're 26th. And then Mississippi State was 28th.
It's the top 25 poll.
That's how we're doing it, Tommy. Yeah. But then also Arkansas did not receive any votes.
Just nor should they.
I wanted to throw that out there as well. But the whole point is with this, though, is that with the SEC teams represented, and now we're starting to see exactly where the national media and people kind of feel like these teams are going to end up. As far as interest goes, because obviously we're going to be interested in Arkansas. That's going to be a team we follow, we cover, we talk about every single day. But as far as your interest goes, which team are you most interested in seeing this year in the SEC and why?
Georgia. Because can they finally knock the crown off the king? You know, can they finally get past Alabama? Isn't that the most intriguing thing that's possible? I mean, does anyone really believe LSU is going to win the West? I mean, to me, the most intriguing thing is, can Georgia and Bama collide in Atlanta, and can Georgia finally get it done? That, to me, is the most realistic, plausible scenario, and I think we would all, in some ways, we want to see Alabama-Clemson again, but we want to see, can finally one of Saban's disciples, can one of his former assistants beat him? And we all believe Kirby Smart, at some point, if he keeps taking swings, is going to do it. It's gotten closer and closer and closer. Saban seems to be slipping a little bit every year, or at least that's the outward appearance. I don't know if it's true or not. To me, I'm very interested in how we all know Georgia is going to be really, really good. Can they be elite? Can they be one of the best two teams in the country? Poll says they're one of the best three. I'm more interested to see if Georgia can be one of the best two.
Which, that was actually one of the ones I had written down, was Georgia. And for pretty much the same reasons that you said, is if they're going to take that next step. Because listen, Kirby Smart's entering in his fourth season at Georgia. And already in the past 2 years, you could say that he's done more in two seasons than what Mark Richt did for however long he was there. 13 years. I forgot how long it was. It was a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to go to a college football playoff game, went to the championship game, ended up in losing to Alabama. And then Georgia, of course, went on and lost the Sugar Bowl last year, but it was still really good for them. But the point is that everyone feels like they're going to be the next king of the mm-hmm. college football, or at least of the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they're right there, and that's going to be that next step. But you can't get to that point unless you knock off the king mm-hmm. right now. Because they haven't beaten Alabama. And just like it is in any other, for any other team, unless you beat Alabama, it doesn't matter. Because Georgia's going to face him in the SEC title game, I believe that. And unless they take that next step, it doesn't matter. So I think that there's intrigue in that. And also to see if they end up knocking off Georgia or knocking off Alabama, does that finally mean that Nick Saban has legitimately taken that step back? Because I'm wondering what will be the storyline. Would it be more about Georgia taking the step forward or Alabama taking the step back?
It would depend. If Alabama has a 10-2 year, you could certainly make that argument. That is a step back.
So
if it's an 11-1 year, here's the thing with Alabama. If they end up, well, it'd be a 12-1 year, I guess, at that point, because they're not going to meet till the SEC championship game. That would be a step back. Alabama has proven they'd be better off to lose to, say, LSU in the regular season and then let things play out the rest of the way, miss the SEC championship game, and still find a way into the college football playoff as a 3 or 4 seed. They've proven that. The worst thing you can do is get to the championship game and lose. That's as far as postseason hopes. Worst thing you can do. We just hadn't seen anyone come back from that. So what would be a step back for Bama? It had to be 10-2, not a 1-loss year. It had to be
a 2-loss regular season.
It'd have to be, to really say, boy, Saban took a step back here. He'd have to be a team that was surrounded by controversy and turmoil, and I think a team that lost a couple of games, maybe even 11-2, I guess you could say, because that would mean maybe a loss in the championship game and a regular season loss. 10-2, or maybe 11-2.
Yeah. So. Well, and also, if you look at Alabama's schedule,
that's a step back.
I know.
About that statement.
Yeah.
Just think about that's how great he has been at Alabama.
Yeah.
That'd be a major step back to go 10-2 this year.
Yeah. But the thing is that their non-conference schedule is so easy this year because they're playing Duke. And, you know, their regular schedule and against SEC teams, of course, their permanent East opponent is Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they have to go through the West, but I mean, we feel like there's not really any team in the West that legitimately has a chance against Alabama or to be better than Alabama. I mean, I know that LSU's going to be good, and I'm no
LSU's the closest.
LSU's probably the closest of everybody, but I think we all feel on the same page there. But their other East opponents, South Carolina, and you don't feel like that's going to be. So it's just, if Alabama was to lose to Ames in the regular season and only go 10-2, as weird as it is to say, this year would be even worse because their schedule, it's not like they got Georgia on there or a Clemson or a Michigan or like some big non-conference game.
Mm-hmm.
Them going 10-2 would be that step back legitimately, and people would start to wonder, is this kind of the beginning of the end of Nick Saban, as stupid as it is to say and as crazy as it is to say? Because the one thing that I know we talked about after the championship game last year, Tommy, is that whenever Nick Saban loses it, or Nick Saban gets beat in the championship game or doesn't win a championship in 1 year, he bounces back the next year. He ends up winning it. And so if he doesn't do that this year, if he doesn't win a championship or at least compete for that championship this year, maybe, just maybe, you can start having the legitimate conversation that this is kind of going to be the beginning of the end for Nick Saban.
Check out the PowerStar family of tractors from New Holland and Williams Tractor in Fayetteville, Berryville, and Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas and Rogers. Six models to choose from 64 to 117 engine horsepower with an open cab or the closed Vision View cab. Check them out right now. The PowerStar family of tractors at Williams Tractor in Fayetteville, Berryville, and Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas and Rogers. How about A&M? We've talked about Bama. We've talked about Georgia. A&M's got to be that program that takes that next step, right? Because they're paying a coach $7.5 million. Now, they got a – has anyone got a more brutal schedule than A&M?
No.
Playing Clemson, playing Georgia, playing Alabama, playing LSU, playing Auburn. I mean, they could be a heck of a football team and go 9-3. And that might be a great job. I mean, because they're going to be two quality teams going 9-3. I mean, but to me, the other intriguing team – in the West is not so much LSU, it's A&M, because there's so much expectation on Jimbo in that program with what they're paying him. And then you look at that schedule, a murderer's row. What can they do this year? Can they win all the games they got to win? Games like against Arkansas? Can they run the table there like they should? And can they win three? Can they win four in these other games? I don't think they can. What kind of year is A&M going to have with the schedule they got in front of them?
I think going 7-5 and 8-4, unfortunately, is going to be a really good year for them. As weird as that is,
7-5? That means they won none of the. I'm assuming you lost to Clemson, lost to Bama.
Yeah, you lost.
And LSU.
LSU, Georgia.
And Auburn?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that's a good year.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think A&M fans would feel
that
way.
No, I don't think A&M fans, but I'm looking at it from the outsider's perspective. I think that would be a good year, but from the A&M perspective,
well,
maybe not.
Well, a good year for A&M is 0-12. But
well, right, that's what we'd all hope
that's
for.
That's not what we're talking about here.
Right, this is a completely different animal. Yeah. But this year for A&M, I guess the interest level for me would be, is Jimbo Fisher actually worth the $7.5 million a year?
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're going to really find out what – is Jimbo Fisher really the elite coach that his – that people want to say, well, he's got the national title. Look at everything he did at Florida State. Is he really amongst the elite coaches in college football? You win that national title, people put you on in that group, in that mm-hmm. club. I think you're going to find out this year what he's really made of. He took Clemson to the wire last year. He's early. What's he going to do against the – I mean, because no one plays a better group of teams than A&M. Nobody.
No. They have the most difficult schedule in all of college football. But this was what it comes down to as well. Because last year, they ended up going, I think, was it 9-4? Yeah, 9-4. They went 5-3 in SEC play. The games they lost was, of course, to Clemson, which you mentioned they went down to the wire. Alabama, they lost 45-23. They lost at Mississippi State, which was strange, 28-13. And then they lost at Auburn, 28-24. So even the games that they lost were really close. And they just smoked NC State in the Gator Bowl, which who cares about that? There was 30,000 people there. But my point is that this year, though, they should take that next step. Even under Kevin Sumlin, they had top 5, top 10 recruiting classes. They have talent that was left over for Jimbo.
That's the problem. They had great quarterbacks and great talent. Couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, and they have Kellen Mond coming back from last year. Great quarterback that at least you think he's going to take that next step. Jimbo Fisher has proven he's pretty dadgum good coach. So to me, there's no reason why Texas A&M shouldn't be better this year than what they were last year. They should go 10-2, I think.
That'd be strong.
But I think they almost have
But
I think they have a built-in excuse, Tommy. I think they have a built-in excuse as well. The schedule's so tough. Well, you've recruited so great. You should be one of those teams.
You're not going to go 12-0, but can you go 9-3? Yeah, I mean, can A&M go 10-2?
Listen, they beat LSU last year. I mean,
and you beat them again this year.
Seven overtimes it took, but they beat them last year.
Caused a rule change.
Yeah. So who knows? If they will, if they'll ever to change some things up, get to that point to where they can go 10-2, then you start having to respect them. But if they go 7-5 and 8-4, start making you wonder, okay, is Jimbo really worth all that money? I don't think so.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.